Hello there. Thanks for taking the time out from watching the European Championships to download and listen to another podcast from the world's longest running football fans podcast at CelticUnderground.net. Peter Lawwell may well be sunning himself on holiday, and the players may well be playing rounds of golf and sitting by the pool in the last week to 10 days of their break before return to Lennoxtown. But here at CelticUnderground.net, our podcast never sleeps. There may be international football on the television, but we thought it appropriate to have a look at some of the wider issues affecting football fans in Scotland. And regular listeners on here will know that it's a particular thing of mine, the lack of customer service that we football fans get when we go to games, and just the way that we are treated very differently from any other leisure industry out there. One of the big reasons for that is the ridiculous Offensive Behaviour at Football Act. Now, you will know that with the changeover in the recent Holyrood elections, which saw things revert to the expected norm of no single party having overall control, one of the first things that was the Labour Party discussed was the repeal of the Offensive Behaviour at Football Act, and that is being taken forward by James Kelly, MSP. I have dealt with James before, so I asked him if he could pop along and have a chat with me about how that act may be repealed and what part he's going to play. And as you'll hear in the podcast specifically, he then gives a bit of information about what part you can play in the repeal of this legislation. He and I cover off some of the points that people raise as to why this legislation is needed. For me personally, you'll hear my point in it quite a few times. Just the very principle of a piece of legislation that says you, as a football fan, have to be treated differently to everybody else in society with a presumption that we need to catch you out for doing wrong. It's just not right. Anyway, I will leave it for you to listen to that. Meantime, prior to that, the music in the background, you'll remember in the Jim Hedella Hunt podcast, I said I was looking for some people to send in some tunes, and we would stick your music on our podcast. And also, if you had a Celtic story about a game that was important to you, if you could stick that down on an audio file, etc. So, first up is some new music. So the first band to send something into podcast at CelticUnderground.net were The Urchins. The song playing in the background just now is Fight Back, and at the end it is Love From A Gun. Links onto their YouTube videos are on the website. So that's The Urchins. Go on to CelticUnderground.net and you'll see their video. Meantime, this is me, Harry Brady, with him, James Kelly. So I'm joined now by Mr. James Kelly, MSP. So before I start, do you want to introduce yourself, explain where you cover as an MSP, what your constituency is?
Okay, I'm one of the Labour list MSPs covering the Glasgow region. Up until the recent election, I was a constituency member for Rutherglen. I lost that seat of the election, but I was elected on the Glasgow list, and that covers the whole of Glasgow plus Rutherglen, which actually sits in South Lanarkshire, but for parliamentary purposes sits in the Glasgow list region. So I represent all the constituencies throughout Glasgow, and people are able to contact me with, you know, general constituency issues or wider political issues.
Before I go on, one of my interesting pieces of information I know about football in Rutherglen and the like is that Clyde missed out on the Intercity Fairs Cup in 1967. because the intercity fares cut was computed between cities, and two-thirds of Shawfield Stadium was in the city of Glasgow and a third was in Rutherglen. So UEFA decided that Glasgow already had Celtic and Rangers, so they needed to go for somebody else from, and so Clyde should have qualified for the intercity fares cut in 67 and never did, because they were two-thirds Glasgow and a third Rutherglen.
I don't know that. How unfair that is. That is one of the things about it, that the boundary does run right through sort of Shawfield, which is no longer Clyde's ground, but the Greyhound track still there.
Okay, before we get going, I need to set out your credentials as a football fan and not one of these plastic politicians who's just jumping on a bandwagon. As if Labour in Scotland would jump on any bandwagon. What was your first football game and who was your first hero?
My first football game was Celtic versus Morton. It was in April 1969, one day after the 1969 Scottish Cup final. I was only 5 at the time, and I remember great excitement getting taken, myself and my second youngest brother at the time, getting taken along to Celtic Park. It was quite a bizarre game, and I've since looked back at it, you know, to read the report. But Celtic, as you know, had a really good season that year, but they lost that game 4-2. I don't know if the players were hungover from the Saturday from the Cup final. And, you know, after all the excitement of getting into the ground, we were in the wee enclosure in front of the stand, as it was then.
Yeah.
And Morton kept scoring, you know, and it seemed really odd, you know. And the other thing I remember about it was that the second half had not long started, and my dad suddenly said, the referee's getting ready to blow his final whistle. And I think that was cue for, there was a crowd of various uncles and all that, and I think they were wanting to leave early to get to the pub. So it was a sort of truncated trip along to Celtic Park. But can I link to that, I suppose, my hero? I wouldn't say I'm a person that goes right in for heroes, but, you know, the one person I would say I've always admired is Billy McNeil. And it links to that time. At that time, we stayed in Denison, but we, from 1972 onwards, we stayed in Halfway. And we didn't go to lots of the games, but we would quite often go, if it was a cup final or a semi-final at Hampden, we would go over. And there was a family stayed nearby, the McGarveys, and Sean McGarvey had a builder's van. And him and my dad would sit in the front of the builder's van, and me and my four brothers and the two McGarveys, 7 of us, would sit in the back of this builder's van. No seats or seat belts or anything like that. The health and safety would have a field day. And we would fire over to Hampden for semi-finals, finals. And my kind of memory of it, you know, quite often Celtic would win.
Yeah.
You know, if you 1970, I remember the 1974 League Cup final, for example, Celtic won 6-3, and the day always ended with Billy McNeil. We would always get into the North Enclosure, and he would end with Billy McNeil holding up the cup, and you'd see the shining cup, and Billy McNeil lifting it up. So, from that time, you know, Billy McNeil was a hero. I think his story is a speaks for itself, both in terms of a player and a manager, but also just in terms of being a man of real integrity.
So that was, you said you didn't go every single week, but you went a lot. Did you start going to football as you got older?
Yeah.
And you still go to football as a politician?
I still go. I don't go as often. I don't have a season ticket anymore. You know, I tend to go, I quite like the start of the season, you know, when it's like the Champions League qualifiers and that. I tend to have more time during the summer than once you get into September. So I don't have a season ticket. I don't go every week, but I still periodically go.
I'll get back to that specifically where I asked that question in a wee minute, but we're here to principally discuss the Offensive Behaviour at Football Act, and you've been the politician with the highest profile who has stood against the Offensive Behaviour at Football Act, and obviously with the SNP losing their majority in the Parliament, one of the first things that came out was you saying, we will take this opportunity to repeal this Act. So first and foremost, What's wrong with the Act in your eyes?
I think it's interesting to actually go back to 2011 and look at the debate and the discussion that took place then. I was heavily involved in that at that time. I led for Labour in terms of the opposition. And if you look at, like, never mind what the politicians were saying, but if you look at what, you know, some of the independent experts or human rights organisations and fans groups were saying, people were saying that it was vague, it was contradictory, it was illiberal, it would lead to a lot of confusion, there was a lack of clarity. And all those things, you know, have come to fruition with it. I think you just need to look at the latest set of statistics that were published on Friday. The Scottish Government made great play of the fact that there had been a 50% increase in charges. 294 people had been charged. If you actually look at it, of those, 25% they didn't take the charge to court, and 2% they took no further action. So that means that 27% of cases are not doing anything about it. And that, to me, illustrates, you know, the unfairness and the confusion around the Act. Mm-hmm. Because what's clearly happened is that people have been arrested at the football by a police officer who genuinely believes that they've committed an offence under the Offence of Behaviour at Football Act. But when it's come to the prosecutors, they've looked at the detail of the evidence around it and thought, that's not going to stand up in court. So to me, the Act's, all the things that were said about it in 2011 have unfortunately shown to be true. The Act isn't working, and that's why I intend pressing ahead with my plans to bring forward a private member's bill to repeal it.
Difficulty for me here is I think the Act's an arse. But I obviously need to put the counter points to you about why people would suggest that it should be in place. First of all, what do you think motivated the SNP to bring this in?
Well, again, I think that's quite interesting. You know, a TV reporter asked me off camera that last week, you know, why did they actually bring it forward? And again, you know, go back to what actually happened. It all goes back to that game in March 2011, the Cup replay. And, you know, what actually happened was, all the listeners will be well aware of what happened, but as the game actually finished, Ali McCoist and Neil Lennon clashed on the touchline, and the cameras were right there. They captured it. And that became the story in the aftermath of that game. That was the image that was, you know, transferred all over the country. And it became a kind of byword for, oh, this is a disgrace, you know. And it was said, this is sectarianism. You know, there's two coaches faced up.
Two people having a fallout.
Yeah.
Nobody knew what was said.
That's right. I still don't know what was said. So in the aftermath of that, you know, there was a lot of media coverage, and there was a lot of commentary around, sectarians, this is sectarianism, and, well, we need to tackle it. And the SNP then called a summit to tackle sectarianism. And on the back of that, remember as well, this was in the run into the 2011 Scottish Parliament election, so there was quite a political context to it. On the back of the summit, Alex Salmond said he would bring forward a bill to tackle sectarianism. He said he would do it, you know, by the start of the new football season. So after the election, he was kind of, he was kind of stuck to that pledge, and you know that was really what kind of, you know, was the event that led to the bill going through. I mean, I actually believe that if you speak privately to some SNP MSPs, I don't think they thought it was a good idea to A, to rush it through, and B, to eventually introduce it. But once the First Minister at that time had said, we're going to introduce that bill, they were doing it. And to me, they were locked into it then. And a lot of the defence of the bill since then from the SNP is because of that, because they introduced it, and they almost can't kind of be seen to backtrack on it.
They do know that sectarianism happens outside football.
Well, I think that's one of the. There was an interesting article by Kenny Farquharson in the Times recently talking about this, And he spoke about how civil servants, you know, politicians, you know, people in places that to affect policy, they didn't have an understanding of sectarianism. He spoke about being at one of the summits. And I think that's part of the problem. They don't have a, you know, they're locked in the civil service offices in Edinburgh, and they saw that McCoy-Len clashes. That's sectarianism, and they don't understand it's something that.
Because you mentioned the stats, the hate crime stats that came out. Mm-hmm. You are 10 times more likely to be attacked if you're Muslim in Scotland in general. 3 times more likely to be attacked if you're Catholic in Scotland in general, and something like 5 times more likely to be attacked or the victim of a hate crime if you're late gay, lesbian, transsexual, whatever. That's nothing to do with football. That's to do with a problem that Scotland as a society has got. And would they not have been better tackling the fact that Scotland's got a problem? Because you'll notice who's not on that list that I'm going through. Mm. I can never get my head around the thought process on why. The other obvious issue with it is they now have had to say, I'm not aware, you'll tell me, has there ever been anybody reported or charged or convicted where the complaint has been made by not a police officer?
From my knowledge of the statistics and the process, I'm not aware of that.
So the only people who are ever offended are police officers?
Well, I think that's one of the other issues, that there's this unit being set up, you know, specifically to, you know, observe, monitor activity around football. So in addition to the Act, at a time when there's been cuts in public services, cuts in police support staff, we set up this unit which, you know, effectively kind of targets football supporters. And, you know, you could say that the success of that unit is reliant on trying to get a significant number of charges. And what that has then done is it's, as well as the issue of police officers judging as to what is offensive behaviour, I think it's led to a lot of more friction between police and fans than mm-hmm. there was previously.
So, if you're not going to have an offensive behaviour at Football Act, and we'll go through the mechanism of how it might be repealed, if you're not going to have an offensive behaviour at Football Act, the counter-argument would be, well, then you are passively accepting sectarian chanting and sectarian abuse that happens and goes on in Scotland around football. How do you counter that argument?
I think if there's behaviour, whether it's in a football match or out with the football match, which is, you know, sectarian, and there's already effective legislation in place to deal with that. There's breach of the peace legislation. There's assault legislation in place, which was used before 2011. Mm-hmm. So there's already legislation in place to deal with this. We don't need a law which effectively focuses on football and creates more confusion, creates more friction, which isn't working. You use the existing legislation, and I think in terms of tackling sectarianism, it's not about a law based around 90 minutes of the football. You know, you need a proper strategy which is based around working in communities, working in schools, working in education, so that, you know, people grow up with a greater awareness of their fellow citizens and how to treat their fellow citizens.
Well, you mentioned schools there. I'm just going through the tick list of defences of the Offensive Behaviour Act. One of the reasons we've got a sectarian problem in Scotland, some would argue, is because we have a separate schooling system, particularly in the west of Scotland. Do you think that plays any part in it, in terms of having Catholic schools and non-denominational schools?
I think that system's been in place. If you want to move forward relations, you know, people need to work better together. I don't think if you had to suddenly turn around and say, well, let's move to, you know, one single schooling system, I don't think that would help, you know, because it would undermine a process of education that's been in place, you know, for the best part of a century. Now it would cause more friction and bad feeling. I think what does need to be done is that there has to be more effective working together between the different schools. You know, I mean, as an example, you know, when I spoke earlier about growing up in Halfway, mm-hmm. when I went to school in Halfway, the two schools were right, and still are right next to each other, St Caddox and Cairns Primary, mm-hmm. and there was no, you know, there was just no interaction, you know, everybody went to school, and there wasn't really, to be honest, I don't remember any great friction or anything like that, but there was absolutely no interaction.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a Project Sense Over Sectarianism that does great work, you know, with schools and different communities, and before the election, it was a great delight to me. They had worked with St Caddox and Cairns, you know, where I grew up, and I went back to St Caddox, my local school, and it was great to see how the kids had come together. They'd worked together in projects, they'd learned about sectarianism, how to tackle sectarianism, and I think we need to see a lot more of that. But I think simply to wipe out, you know, a section of the schooling that one of the community has become used to and sees as part of their tradition would not help the problem.
The other thing that was then raised in May, obviously all happening quite shortly after one another, was the trouble at the Scottish Cup final between Rangers and Hibs. And the SNP again stood up and said, see, this proves the need for the Offensive Behaviour of Football Act. So how would you counter that argument that you, at the very time you're trying to minimise legislation on these dirty down-market football fans who need to be treated as a third-class citizen, you are trying to raise these people to the same standards as the rest of society? How do you respond to that charge of trying to treat football fans like normal human beings? And get rid of the Offensive Behaviour of Football Act, and that caused a problem. That would cause a problem for the likes of the trouble with the Rangers Hibs scheme.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously the SNP just did, you know, jump on that. Again, it was the TV scenes, you know, thousands of people on the park, you know, and people were watching it on their TV, and the SNP were saying, oh, we really need this Offensive Behaviour at Football Act because it'll, you know, it'll deal with all that. But, I mean, if you actually look at it, you know, how many people have ended up, I think there was some more charges last week, but there's not that many people who have actually ended up being charged.
And how many of them are charged under the Offensive Behaviour at Football Act? They'll be charged to do with assault.
Well, interestingly, on the first tranche, I think of it was about 11 or 12 charges, three were charged under the Offensive Behaviour at Football Act. I had said publicly at the time, you know, this isn't relevant. Anybody charged will be charged under breach of the peace. But it was really interesting that they managed to find three people that were charged under Offensive Behaviour at Football, and I don't understand that, you know, pitch invasions and people coming on in an unruly manner have been happening for years at football. They don't happen all that regularly, thankfully. The Cup final was an exceptional incident, but people who do come over the fence and, you know, commit some sort of unacceptable behaviour are charged either under breach of the peace or if they assault.
How will the French cope? They'll not be able to charge a single Russian or English fan because they don't have the Offensive Behaviour at Football Act.
I mean
the utter nonsense of it.
I know, that did strike me at the weekend, you know.
But the other aspect of that would be that's disconcerting as a non-political person. That it looks to me as if in order to justify something that the politicians want to happen, the police and the Procurator Fiscal's office are shoehorning in the legislation and charging people under an act that they do not need to charge them under. That's very dangerous for a democracy to be getting itself into that type of position.
Well, what's going to be really interesting is these cases proceed to look at, you know, why were they charged under the Offensive Behaviour at Football Act, and could they have been charged under other legislation? You know, because I think if it's the case that police and prosecutors are shoehorning in charges under Offensive Behaviour at Football so that Michael Matheson can then say this is an important tool in the fight against offensive behaviour, you know, that's totally unacceptable.
So, is there any merits in the Offensive Behaviour Football Act that you see?
I struggle to see any merits in it because, as I say, you know, what is it you're trying to achieve around football? What we want is people, a bit like the example I gave earlier about going to Hampden, you know, we want people, kids and families, to be able to go to the matches, enjoy the atmosphere, enjoy the football, go away at the end of the day and say, that was a great day out, let's do it all again next Saturday. So you want to promote, you know, good behaviour, you know, and you want to ensure that fans behave in a proper and appropriate manner. But if you look at the Offensive Behaviour at Football Act, you have a situation. I've had people, you know, constituents of mine come up and say to me, I've never committed an offence in my life. I've never been involved with the police. I go to the football and police are filming me and they're frisking me going in the door. And it's, you know, but fans are, rather than going to the game and enjoying the atmosphere, fans are going to the game getting agitated and uptight. And it doesn't add to the, you know, the overall enjoyment of the experience. So I struggle to see, you know, what it's actually achieved. You know, it's not working in legislative terms. If you've got confusion amongst the police and the prosecutors, and some of the sheriffs have been very vocal about this, it's not working in legislative terms in terms of prosecuting people, and it's not working in terms of improving the atmosphere around the football. I mean, I've been going to the football for 40 years. I've seen incidents where, the atmosphere has been really bad. There's been a lot of, you know, there's been violence in the streets or violence at the games. And my genuine experience in recent years, I'm not saying there are not incidents that need to be dealt with, but my genuine experience is that not any way as bad as it was.
Nothing. 20 years it ago. Is a million miles away from what it was like pre Hillsborough.
Yeah, the seated stadiums have made a massive difference.
And Hillsborough, to me, is one of the key bits in this, and it gets back to me asking you if you went to games. For me, part of the problem with the authorities on football in the 80s is the people who were making decisions about how to deal with problems with the football didn't go to the football. They weren't football fans. They watched it through the TV, as you've identified. So it created a them and us culture. Football fans were some lower class who permanently needed to be controlled. You had to watch out for them because they're about to cause trouble. So everything about the whole policing, the whole attitude to everything is fence them in, because if we don't, they'll just cause trouble because they're some underclass. And we fortunately managed to wipe, unfortunately it took the 96 days to the Liverpool fans, that fortunately we managed to get rid of that culture and realise that football fans are normal human beings for every day of their life, who just happen to go to football as part of entertainment. And for me, the thing about the Offensive Behaviour Act is part of that reverting to the 80s culture. Before we, without the 80s trouble, reverting to the 80s culture of people who don't understand football, don't go to the football, who are imposing these people need to be controlled mentality, which, when you create that them and us, that's what leads to a Hillsborough type event, because it's about deal with them first, ask questions later. And that's my big concern about it. So how do you then get to, and so that's what I was asking if you went to games. to see, because I don't think the people who created this legislation go to games.
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. They don't understand, you know, it's a very good kind of assessment that it's a solution that was created when you might have argued for the relevance of that in the 80s, you know, when people did clash, you know, people went to the games, they stood on the terraces, remember the casuals and all that?
Yeah.
They did look for fights, you know, the atmosphere's completely moved on. And I suppose the thing for football fans, they're looking for a bit of respect, you know, how can you expect people to come to the game, enjoy a good family experience, if when they turn up, you know, they're greeted by police and cameras, they're greeted by getting frisked. They're not being treated with respect. They're entitled to be treated with respect. They're decent citizens, like you and I.
And the other aspect of that is, even when you do look at the numbers of issues around football, the amount of times that it arises from, I often joke it should be called the offensive behaviour at pubs in the middle of Lanarkshire and Ayrshire Act. Because actually that's where the bulk of the problem is. It's in pubs where people are drinking too much, where a Rangers pub and a Celtic pub in some small town are across the road from each other, and the people come out and have a fight in the street and then go back in the pub. That seems to be, I was at that, the infamous shame game. And I always go on about the fact that I was completely oblivious to the Lennon and McCoist head-to-head. Because what wasn't caught by the camera was Elhaj Diouf wanted to chuck his shirt into the Rangers fans and the police were shepherding him away and he was ignoring the police. That was the only thing that I noticed that was going on in the park. It wasn't, and then it wasn't until I was on my way home and nearly home and I heard Radio Scotland talking about Rangers players arguing with the referee McCoist and Lennon. I was oblivious to it. And I would say the majority of people on the ground were oblivious to it. Which means it was a TV event. Which means it wasn't about football grounds. I've never understood. That's what demonstrated to me it was legislation done by somebody who doesn't go to the football. Certainly somebody who wasn't in that game.
And I think that, I think also the interesting thing is that if you look, again, the football's changed, you know, particularly in the last 20 years, and that a lot more of it is TV-based. You know, if you analyse, there's not been so many Old Firm games, obviously, of recent times, but if you go back to when they were playing regularly, very few arrests at the actual game. Mm-hmm. There would be more arrests. The games start at 12:30, you know, to minimise any trouble, but people would tend to go to the pub, they would drink all day. Any of the kind of arrests or violence would tend to take place, you know, later at night and, you know, in towns and villages, you know, miles away from where the original games were.
And they trot out things like the unfortunate domestic abuse statistics and the increase in them. And I've never been able to find if somebody has analysed domestic abuse statistics around Scotland games or other events. Because for me, unfortunately, someone who's a wife beater is a wife beater. They're not a football fan who beats their wife, they're a wife beater. And the trigger mechanism is too much alcohol or an emotional event in their life, and probably the alcohol and the emotional event occurring at the same time being the football is the problem. And should we not as a society be trying to tackle the misuse of alcohol and domestic abuse problems rather than, it seems to me as a let's package up a number of social problems that the country's got, lay that package at the door of football, and then we can blame somebody else instead of having to properly tackle it. Because if sectarianism's an issue, it's an issue in society. If domestic abuse is an issue, it's an issue with society. If alcohol's a problem, it's a problem with society. It's not football's just the manifestation of where it occurs. It's not football's fault. Football's just where it happens. And as politicians, shouldn't the SNP's job be tackling sectarianism in the wider part of Scotland, alcohol abuse in the wider part of Scotland, and domestic abuse in the wider part of Scotland, and offensive and behaviour and online offensive behaviour in the wider part of Scotland, and not trying to package it up and put it at the door of football?
I think ultimately the job of any government is to tackle the issues and to try and promote and produce a better society. And I think what you found around the Offensive Behaviour at Football Act was it became almost like a kind of PR exercise. You know, it sounded good to say, you know, we're tackling sectarianism, and, you know, the SNP and the civil servants became locked into that. But the evidence shows, you know, that it's done nothing to help the atmosphere around football. It's done nothing to tackle around sectarianism. And the job of governments in general, even aside the Offensive Behaviour of Football Act, you know, should be to tackle the big issues and to try and build a better country.
So, how, if one of the things you've identified is that it will be difficult for the SNP to put their hands up and say, we made a mess of this, how do you repeal it?
Well, I've already begun work on the private members bill to repeal it, and I hope to produce my initial proposal, which is the first stage in effect, by the end of this month. Mm-hmm. You know, I tend to move quite quickly on this. I'm going to run a consultation over the summer, you know, which will allow people with all different views, you know, different political parties and also different fans groups, their view on it. And at the end of that, you produce a final proposal, which needs to be supported by three parties in Parliament and 18 MSPs in order to then get the right to introduce a bill, which I would hope to then go on and do, you know, early next year. Essentially, as a result of the election, there's now 65 opposition MSPs and 63 SNP MSPs. Mm-hmm. Certainly, you know, during this process, I'll be looking to get the support of as many MSPs as possible, including SNP MSPs. But I'm quite hopeful of getting the support of the Liberals, the Greens and the Conservatives, mm-hmm. which would get me to 65. So in terms of parliamentary, there's a process to go through, but in terms of parliamentary arithmetic, I need to secure the support of 65 MSPs in order to repeal the Act.
Do you think it'll, and you know, you'll know more about how the Parliament works and all, it's not supposed to be confrontational. Do you think you'll get the 65 principally because it's a way of voting down a piece of SNP legislation? Do you think that'll be the motivating factor for a chunk of them? Or do you think you'll genuinely get the 65 plus number or the majority number that you need on a consensual, including SNP MSPs?
I'll work with everybody in order to try and achieve the 65. You know, it's important that, you know, I'm a Labour MSP, but I need the support of the other parties to get this through. So, you know, I'll work with other parties, including the SNP, to get this through. I mean, it does concern me about the SNP. I'm sure that if you're able to get them all in here privately and they were to talk to you openly, there'll be a number within that 63 SNP group who, you know, are not supportive of the Offensive Behaviour at Football Act. But the SNP run their operation, you know, with a kind of...
They seem very disciplined.
Yeah, and it might be difficult to, you know, to see anyone kind of break away from that group. But I'll certainly be appealing to people and I'll be making the case on the basis that I don't think the legislation's worked. And that we need to look at other solutions to tackle
situations. So, and the reason I'm asking that is simply because, getting back to they seem very disciplined, they just seem a party who, I'm trying to be apolitical here, their strategy appears to be to do nothing that rocks the boat. That seems to have been their strategy for the past, as an outsider looking in, for the past 6 or 7 years. Don't rock the boat, we may get independence. That's what it looks like as an outsider. So don't do anything too extreme. But as a consequence of that, it just seems very difficult that you'll get the 4 or 5 rebels that you might need to counter one or two people on the opposition side of things who like the Offensive Behaviour Act.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be very tight. You know, it's going to be a big job, you know, to try and... I mean, it's a massive job to try and get... I mean, there's 65 opposition MSPs and I need every single one of them. And don't forget, I need every single one of them to be fit and able and mm-hmm. able to vote in Parliament.
Yeah, not if the flu, not if the... Yeah.
On that day, so there's a lot at stake. And the recent history of the SNP, just look at the EU referendum. You know, we've seen, if you look at Labour and Conservative, there are different voices for Remain and Leave. And, you know, for the SNP, over 100 parliamentarians and not one of them, they're all solidly for Remain, you know. And to be honest, I find that
you must know privately that they're not all. You must know privately there's at least one sitting there who's. You don't need to name his name or her name, but you must know there must be some of them sitting there going, "I wish I didn't have to do this."
I just can't believe that, you know, over 100 of them are solidly for Remain. It's such a big issue, which is dividing the country, mm-hmm. and similarly on the Offensive Behaviour at Football Act, I can't believe that all 63 are in favour of it remaining in place. And that'll be my job to try and, as you say, you know, get a few on board, you know, to counter any slippage on the other side.
One of the things you mentioned, or that I've seen mentioned, was Matheson, the SNP guy. Is it Michael Matheson? Michael Matheson, saying that he thought it was a waste of parliamentary time when there's so many other things affecting the country to put this legislation through. Your point about you need three parties and 18 MSPs, is that all you need to be able to get it running and happening?
Yeah.
So they've got to give you the time.
Well, it'll then, if I get that and I get the bill up for consideration, there's a process to manage it in the Justice Committee. I've got a job to do in taking evidence and assessing the bill. The Parliamentary Bureau, which contains you know, members from different political parties, has a decision in terms of, you know, scheduling it.
Mm-hmm.
I've no doubt that the government will look at how they can delay it, and I've no doubt that they'll. It's interesting, some of the comments since the election, including from Kenny McCaskill, people have started to say, well, it's not perfect, you know, but let's amend it to address its shortcomings,
mm-hmm,
rather than wipe it out altogether. And I've no doubt that, you know, a combination of trying to delaying tactics and also bringing forward amendments, dressing them up as, you know, making the bill better and, you know, tackling sectarianism, yeah, there'll be all that to play for. So there's a big job for me.
Mm-hmm.
I need to be robust in moving this forward. I need to be solid in my arguments, and I also need to be adept at the parliamentary tactics.
So you talked about, at the moment, you're hoping to have that first draft out by the end of June and then circulating for consultation. So when you say available for consultation, who can comment on it? Who can, and how would they do that?
I think that's really important, you know, particularly for people that are listening, because one of the things that struck me since the election, since I've said I would take this forward, is that certainly online, a lot of kind of some SNP people have really kind of gone after me on it,
mm-hmm,
particularly after the Scottish Cup final. And it's important that a consultation will be published. There'll be an online questionnaire where people have an opportunity to put forward their views on the bill, on the repeal.
And will that be on the Holyrood website?
Yeah, that'll be on the Holyrood website. I'll also have a website of my own that'll be pushing this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important that people have got views on the bill, and they want to see the bill repealed, that they take part in that consultation and they put their views forward. In addition to, so that's online, that'll be easily
You're
available.
On Twitter, aren't you?
I am indeed.
Do you know your Twitter address?
It's James K. Lab. Is.
James K. I'm just thinking, if people followed you, you'll be saying when it's, you'll be able to, so if they follow you on that, and you're on Facebook as well.
Yeah.
What, do you know what you are on Facebook?
I can't remember the Facebook address.
I'm sure if they search for James Kelly Labour Facebook, they'll come up with it. But if they, and obviously if they just look for you, James Kelly MSP, I'm sure they'll be able to find, to make sure that they keep contact, to be aware of, I mean, obviously I will put stuff up when that consultation process begins. Because one of the worst things people can be guilty of doing is howling at the moon, complaining online at Twitter, and talking to lots of people in 140 characters about how things aren't good, and not actually doing where it matters, which is that consultation process.
Yeah, I mean, it's important. I mean, you know, my experience is there's a lot of opposition to this bill, not just amongst football supporters, but human rights groups, and other independent experts. But it's important that that opposition makes its voice heard during this consultation process, because other people who would prefer to see the bill in place will no doubt use the consultation process to argue for that.
How long does that consultation process take?
That's going to take place over 12 weeks, so right. If I launch this at the end of June, it will run July, August and September. So, you know, people have the opportunity during that 12 weeks to make their views known. The other thing to say is that I'll run a number of public events during that 12 weeks, you know, to publicise the consultation and also to give people the opportunity to bring their views forward.
I suppose from your perspective, the really important thing, because my perception from speaking to football fans of other teams, there's a bit of a concept that this is a Celtic Rangers thing. It doesn't really affect them. And the challenge you've got, as someone who grew up in the 80s going to watch football, I find any piece of legislation that says you football fans are different from everybody else utterly repulsive. I mean, I'd love to get a podcast from Michael Matheson and sit him down and tell him he's a diddy. Or not him, Kenny McCaskill's a diddy and an idiot. And I can't understand how anybody with half a brain cell could even think the concept of the Offensive Behaviour in Football Act is a good idea. The thing now, so talk about South Lanarkshire. Trains go to Edinburgh through Cambuslang Station, and trains go to Dalmarnock through Cambuslang Station. I can stand on the same day, I could stand on one side of Cambuslang Station wearing clothes and singing a song and get arrested, and stand on the other side of Cambuslang Station wearing exactly the same stuff and not get arrested. That's bonkers. Anybody who thinks that's a good idea is bonkers. I'd love to get them in here and have a chat with them and ask them how they think it's got any merit whatsoever. But there's a perception that that's because I'm a Celtic fan and it's my fault.
There's a, just like I described the parliamentary process, and you know, it's not going to work if this is just seen as a Labour idea. I need to work with politicians from all the parties. So, like, for example, during this week, I'll be meeting formally the Conservatives, the Liberal Democrats and the Greens to discuss this private members' bill. And similarly outside Parliament, you know, it's not going to work if it's just seen as an exclusive, you know, work of Celtic and Rangers fans. We need all the fans to get involved. And I'll be seeking to build that up during the consultation period.
Would you work with the SNP if they said, well, what we're going to then do is we take on board, say you manage to muster what looks to them as if you're on your, they're not sure if you'll get to 65, but you're en route, and it will certainly be a debate, and they don't want to lose anything in Parliament. If they then sat down and said, right, James, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We are happy to have a root and branch reform, but we're keeping the principle of this Act. Would you work with them on that? Or would you say, no, the Act is so bad, it's chucked out the window?
I'm quite prepared to, you know, discuss, you know, other issues around this, how you tackle sectarianism. I know Michael Matheson, for example, has introduced strict liability. I'm quite prepared to discuss all of those things, but my bottom line is, you know, I was there when this Act got passed. I know it was a bad idea then. The implementation of it has been a complete mess. It's not worked out at all. So my bottom line is, I want to take the Act out, and then right after you have discussions about how we deal with some of the other issues to, you know, promote a better atmosphere at football, to tackle sectarianism out in Scotland's communities. But I'm not going to be kind of sidled off. And I'm quite sure there'll be some, as I said earlier, there'll be delaying tactics, and there'll be tactics to try and dress up amendments or initiatives as addressing the bill's shortcomings. But I don't want that bill remaining in place. You know, my objective here is to take it out.
Okay. And if you fail, is there any route to go back, or do you just have to leave it and wait for the Act to make a mess of itself and then revisit it?
You can continue to revisit these things. Mm-hmm. You know, but I mean, what I would say is, you know, the election result was about a surprise. Going into election day, a lot of people thought the SNP were going to get an overall majority, and when it became apparent at 8:30 in the morning that wasn't going to be the case, people then began to look at, you know, what are the issues that potentially the SNP could be under pressure on, and this was one of the first that was highlighted, and I said immediately I would take this bill forward. But, you know, so that's what creates the opportunity. If the SNP had an overall majority, you and I probably wouldn't be sitting here. So I need to make the most of that opportunity. I need people who are listening that are opposed to the bill to support me and support the campaign to take the bill.
Contact the MSP.
Yeah, contact the.
They don't need to wait for the consultation. They can start now and say, yeah. "I believe a consultation's coming up. Here's my opinion."
I mean, I think that's the thing for the SNP. I've got a lot of MSPs. There's a lot of people out in constituencies, like people who are listening to this, who will have voted SNP, but will be unhappy about the bill. And I think what they need to be saying to their SNP MSPs, whether they voted for them or not, this is an illiberal piece of legislation. It works against football fans. We want it out and we want you to support this private members bill. Because one thing politicians understand is when their own voters begin to kind of, you know, email in large numbers, they begin to feel the pressure, and that can sometimes create change.
MPs are like football managers.
That's right, yeah.
Yes. It's, what is it they say, it's not the owners who sack football managers, it's the fans.
Yeah.
So it's not the presiding officer who gets rid of MSPs or MPs, it's the voters. Oh. And it's the sentiment of voters. You know, if I'm quite sure if people listen to it, you'll give me a better idea. Actually, a number of voters or a handful of people on exactly the same topic can feel probably to you like a lot of people. If you, on one topic, suddenly get the only comment you're getting is negative about one topic, your perception is that everybody dislikes that. Everybody's got an issue with it. Because that's the only voice you're hearing. So if everybody listening to this contacts their MSP, I doubt there'll be that many people writing to their MSP saying, "I strongly believe in the Offensive Behaviour Act, can you please support it?" So if everybody listening to this contacts their MSP, there's a greater chance that the MSP might start to listen.
That's right. I mean, as I keep saying, I need to get 65 votes to get this through. The SNP would like to portray my actions as, you know, not dealing with unacceptable and offensive behaviour at football. They would like to just demonstrate it as a kind of bad move that's unhelpful. But if people are speaking out, and I know how unpopular the Act is, but if people are speaking out and they're contacting the MSPs in large numbers, I can tell you, having been on the receiving end of it, that grabs an MSP's attention.
Okay, so hopefully things will move forward there. I've kept you long enough, but I've just got one more thing. How do you think things are going to go under Brendan Rodgers?
Well, like everybody, I think there's always a great euphoria as you get around to a new season, and Celtic fans they love a big figure, they love a charismatic figure, and I think for all, you know, people might argue about Ronnie Dyla's assets and strengths, he wasn't seen as a charismatic figure. So I think Brendan Rodgers is seen as a leader, and I mentioned earlier that, you know, one of the things I love about the football, I love the European nights. Mm-hmm. You know, I can remember like the Celtic Real Madrid 1980 game, you know, yeah. Fantastic. And we've seen a lot of those great nights in recent times. And I think that's going to be the test for Brendan Rodgers. You know, can he get us into the Champions League group stage? And, you know, can we start to progress in Europe again? But I think he's given, you can see with the queues for the season tickets, he's given great hope. It's going to be a really interesting season with Rangers back in the league, and I think I'm like everybody else, I'm looking forward to it.
There was one thing just made me think there as you were talking. There was an STV survey, I didn't see the exact detail, but it was pretty much saying that the bulk of the parliament is made up with, I think it was a large proportion of Celtic fans, a reasonable proportion of Hibs fans, Dundee United and Aberdeen fans, that proportionately there was a low number of Rangers fans in the parliament. Why is that? Do you think that might have changed now the Tories have got in?
Well, I didn't sort of drill down to the figures on that survey, but I think that included.
Was it after the new vote?
Yeah, that included the new Tory group. You would think that you would get more.
They're probably just not interested in football.
Maybe that's the case, but it's interesting that, you know.
Anyway, I will say, James Kelly, thanks very much. And if everybody, I will I'll make sure the details are included for how you can contact your MSP. I hope you enjoyed that podcast, and if you want to take some action in relation to the offensive behaviour at Football Act, you can follow James on Twitter. He is at James Kelly Lab. That's James Kelly Lab on Twitter. You can email him at his email address of james.kelly.msp@parliament.scot. So you can do that, or just go onto the Scottish Parliament website, look for your own MSP, and there'll be your constituency MSP and your list MSPs, and contact them directly if you want to put pressure on them to vote and assist James in repealing the Act. Meantime, there'll be more podcasts along soon. St Anthony's got another couple of good interviews coming up. There's plenty of Celtic FC Foundation stuff that you can go online. Today, for example, they just announced a £7,000 contribution to the infamous tax, or not the infamous, the famous Glasgow taxi summer trip down to Troon. Again, more good work from the Celtic Game Foundation. Anyway, we get fixtures coming out soon, and Champions League draw soon, and St Anthony stuff soon. So that was James Kelly with me, Harry Brady. Playing in the background are the Urchins. This is me, Harry Brady, saying good night and God bless. Good night. She takes me higher and higher.